the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right, welcome into another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. As always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. Getting close to the end of the year, getting ready to wind it down here. We got one show next week. That one's just going to be for fun. Got a couple good topics, but this week we're going to cover it all. Lions, Michigan State, no Michigan again this week, thank the Lord. Russ and I were saying before the show, just feels like a loss anyway, so we won't talk about it. Got a couple other things, NHL, NBA getting ready to kick off here soon, so we want to have some fun with that. Before I do that, I have to bring in the other two. Statman Russ Ivanek, how are we doing today, buddy?
I'll put it this way. I've been picking up a lot of shit this week, so it makes sense that I installed the bidet. It's been helping out.
I love that Russ just paints the word picture perfect for you every week. He can't just come out and say, it's been a rough one. He puts a beautiful painting in front of you, and it's made of shit. It really is.
It's we're in the business of making ears happy. Let's make ears happy talking about poop.
Yeah, he doesn't realize, Russ can't smell, for those of you who don't know, so he doesn't realize that's a smelly, smelly painting. It really is.
Is it now?
And Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus, who I told him I was going to be nice to him today, so we started a clock. We're a minute and 30 seconds in. I want to see how long that clock goes before I just can't be nice to Justin anymore. Look, if you don't know this, I love this guy. This guy is the best. He's so much fun to have on. It's just... To quote Rob Riggle in Step Brothers, it's just your face. I need you to change it. Change it now.
Hey, you'd be nice and I'll be nice, all right? Ben Wallace will never make it into the Hall of Fame, buddy. So let's just have a day. Let's do a good pod, and let's see how long you can be nice to me. BenWallaceSucks.com. Go to that website. Check it out.
And that clock made it 2 minutes and 5 seconds. No. All right, lots to talk about. We're going to lead off with Lions today, but something that didn't make the rundown, kind of because it happened real fast. I texted you guys about this. I think the Detroit Lions are listening to our podcast, guys. Hiring Chris Spielman into an executive role, going to work his way up. Kind of a big thing, but it's the thing you want. It's the way to let's honor a former Lion. Let's keep it in the family, but let's not give him the keys to the Corvette yet. He can start out driving like a Toyota, and he'll work his way up to the nice car.
We almost have to go back and grab what exactly we said, because it was almost word for word what we picked out is what ended up happening. And there is a concerted effort, it seems, to not go out and make the same mistake of, oh, we're not going to be the Lions. We're going to do it the Patriot way, right? We're going to steal all those. It seems very much like they've decided we're going to do this the Lions way, which, don't tell anyone, has sucked very, very much for a very, very long time. but at least it's that identity. It's the teen movie, right, where it's, well, stop trying to be someone else and just start being yourself. Really, yeah. You don't suck. Well, you're still the nerd, and it still sucks. But it'll suck like we want it to.
We'll be able to control the suck. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I get what you're
Barry's
saying.
Back, right? He's part of the coaching panel or coaching search panel. Herman Moore's a part of it too. Chris Spielman. So yeah, they're playing the hits. They're playing the nostalgia for that one playoff win. Yeah. Bring it up.
The thing I don't like is, and I saw this today, they seem to be making the right decision there. Like, I like Chris Spielman. But he was a former player, so he knows the game. But he's been in an analyst booth the last couple years. So not to say he's out of touch with the game, but you need to get a feel for what you're doing. Like, you can't just walk in and do it. You need to get a little bit of a feel. What I don't like is that Louis Riddick's name keeps popping up. He's interviewing in Houston today.
Interview.
And he'll be interviewing in Detroit, I believe, either tomorrow or the day after. So, Jay?
Well, with the Spielman thing, I listened to him on the Ticket this morning, and his interview was chock full of all the platitudes and all the intentions, which, you know, if you get sold on intentions, God bless you. Like, I want actions to prove what the intentions come from.
Yeah.
But to your point, he was claiming that before games that he does broadcasting on, he talks to other coordinators and they're afraid of Matthew Stafford because they know he's explosive. And he claims he's still in touch with the game because he talks to the other team that he's about to broadcast against. But again, that's like, the coach isn't going to give up the playbook to an analyst in the booth to then put it. So like, I'm the platitudes, the intentions, I don't want it. I want results. And that's why, like, I heard all this stuff and I'm like, okay, good. But now prove it. Say all these nice things and then do it.
But you did say something good there, because he is keeping in touch with the game, and he's kind of realizing teams are a little more afraid of Stafford than we like to give them credit for. A lot of us think, oh, Stafford's terrible, no team really fears him. But they are. So he knows, okay, we have the quarterback. Now we need to, like, I've seen that other teams don't want to play Matt Stafford. I have to find a way to get pieces around him so they really don't want to play Matt Stafford. And, I mean, we'll see what it comes of that. Obviously, Green Bay is not too afraid to play us. 31-24 win this past week. Aaron Rodgers, 26 of 33, 290 and 3 touchdowns. Look, it's Aaron Rodgers, people. Like, if you don't expect him to do that, then you haven't clearly watched football over the last decade. Matt Stafford on the other side, 24 of 34, 244, 1 touchdown. Obviously, went down with the injury. Chase Daniel came in, 3 of 6, 29 yards. Again, I feel like this is just it's on repeat when it comes to us. No real running game to speak of. Swift, 7 carries, 24 yards. Danny Amendola, leading receiver, with 6 catches for 66 yards. TJ Hockenson, 6 catches for 43 yards and a touchdown. So Hockenson gets on the scoreboard, helps out where he can. Just, again, like, we keep circling back to it, and I think we are going to until something changes. They don't know what they want to do in this running game, and I'm starting to believe, I don't think they even think they have the piece they need to effectively be in this running game. And that kind of worries me, because two of the last 3 years, we've wasted a second round pick on a running back.
Oh, they don't. And I kind of liken it to, hey, it's an engine in a car, right? And you're trying to buy this super good engine and drop it right in. Never mind that the sheet metal is shit and the chassis is all rusty as hell, right? You don't have the structure to support the premium part that you're putting into it. And there's questions on whether that's even premium or not, carry on. Aaron Rodgers had more yards on the same amount of carries combined as Adrian Peterson and Kerryon Johnson. That's my big takeaway from the running attack. Swift, yeah, he looked okay coming back. But, geez, this is a bad running attack. And I can't blame it all on the running backs because, hey, the offensive line's getting beat to hell. But there's something systematically wrong here because it's just been so consistently bad for so long that it's – I don't know if it's in the water or what's going on, but Detroit Lions have been synonymous with what's a running game for far too long.
No, like – and Russ is not over-exaggerating when he says beat to hell. Like, Frank Ragnow literally finished the game with a fractured throat. We discussed this. I've spoken to a doctor about this. Like, literally – it's a bad joke to make, but our offensive line is legitimately choking. It's not good. I don't like making
that joke. Was great.
It's terrible.
Can you edit end up?
Oh, I can. I can do that anytime you want, man. All you got to do is ask for it.
I assumed you were going to go with the pass rush was just ready to ram it down our throats.
No, I'm much simpler in my comedy. But, Jay, I mean, if anyone's going to be more critical of this running attack, of this team, I mean, you're Sergeant Salty for a reason. Like, this isn't for any other – like, it's not because you like to put salt on your food. You're a salty individual when it comes to this team. But I will add in there, this is a bad running attack, but this isn't – I mean, the names are good. This is a bad receiving core right now. The top receiver had 6 catches for 66 yards. Now, granted, 27 completions means he spread the ball around, but – at some point, Marvin, you're not going to probably be here next year. You might want to start putting up some big numbers to, you know, attract a contract. Sanu, you're on your second team. You're looking to stick somewhere. Not going to work with 2 catches for 37 yards. You have these young guys like Quintez Cephas who wants to be here. 2 catches for 18 yards, not going to get it done. Hockenson is not going anywhere anytime soon. I think that the Lions like what they're getting out of him. And I think Stafford really likes him. Danny Amendola, I've said this before, he's Golden Tate light, pretty much. He's a good toss away to try to, you know, when you're getting trapped, you need to get rid of the ball. Danny Amendola is the guy coming across the middle to get it, Jay.
Yeah, the receiving side isn't getting any help at all. I also think it's a product of not having a ground game either. I mean, I think it was week 3 or week 4. I said the demise of this team will be their ground game. They don't have one. I don't know what to make of the Sanus and the Amendolas. I mean, I think they're nice pieces. I see them have more explosive plays than Hockenson. Hockenson's just a catch a ball and fall down kind of guy. Russ has nailed this week in and week out. You need Galladay. Galladay makes everyone else better. That has been, okay, Kelvin. Kelvin makes everyone else better. You know, we had Anquan Boldin, which was the equivalent of Amendola right now. Like, we are a one-dimensional team when it comes to being, you know, catching the ball. And if you don't have your key guy out there, it lessens everyone else's value on the field. I don't think we're doing a lot great.
I think we're one-dimensional because we genuinely are one of the only teams I've seen who can't stick to the run. Never mind if the run isn't going great. We will completely abandon it, and we turn into Texas Tech, just throwing the air raid at you and trying. And I get that when you're playing behind, that's what you got to do. But eventually teams know, hey, if we just stick on their run long enough, they're going to give up on it altogether, and then we know we can just go into pass. So it is a tough thing. Moving on, we have the Tennessee Titans this week. Now, listen, if you had told me start of this season and those last three games, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would be the team I'm least afraid of our final three games, I would have laughed at you. But look, 2 weeks out of the next three, we have to go up against two of the best running backs in the league. Obviously, Derrick Henry this week, Dalvin Cook to end the year. We can't afford another loss. 8-8 is the best we can finish, and it's probably what we're going to have to finish just to even have a remote chance of creeping into that wild card, and that's a long shot anyway. Never mind the fact that we have to stop two of the best running backs in the league. Tennessee, 74% favorite. Spread is 10.5, over under 51.5. Before we get to all this, I want to ask you guys. Lions have come out saying Stafford rib injuries, some torn cartilage and all that. They're still staying optimistic that he might play. Russ, I'm assuming it's you because, like I said, we all share this Twitter, but Russ does a majority of the tweeting. So I'm assuming it was you asking on the retweet saying it's should he play, not that he can play. And I want to ask you guys, we're 5-8 right now. We need to win out just to even have a chance. And even that chance guarantees us, guess what? We're going to play the New Orleans Saints probably, or a team like that. A team that we'd have to go Cinderella story on just to even have a shot. Do you, knowing there's a coaching change coming, knowing there's a front office shift coming, do you tell Stafford, we're shutting you down for the rest of the year, Chase can finish it out, we're a long shot to do it anyway, and do you just kind of tell this guy you're not going to finish this year? But at the same time, this is another year that Matt Stafford isn't finishing a season, and it just makes you wonder, if we get into contention and we start actually winning, can we trust Matt Stafford to finish a season, Jay?
I have to imagine he wants to finish the season. He's a tough dude. Like, no one can ever knock him for that. And it's his, like, moniker, if you will, that he's a tough guy. If anyone had any backbone in the organization, they would shut him down. If they think that they're going to win with him and use him with their next head coach and GM, they should shut him down and say, no, tough man, sit down. Like, it's great. You're good. Please stop. We care about your future and your health and all those good things. They should shut him down. I don't think they will. I think Stafford gets to kind of, you know, he gets to LeBron his way around the organization and kind of call the shots and gets to go on the field this weekend.
Okay. Well, I think part of it, too, Stafford has been quoted as saying Brett Favre was his favorite player growing up. Brett Favre was the Iron Man. Like, he would lie about injuries just so he didn't lose his starting job. So, I mean, it is what it is, Russ.
Brett Favre, noted painkiller addict once upon a time. Yeah. Maybe not the role model you want. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. Stafford, if he can, he will try to play in this game. And we've seen him mic'd up trying to evade coaches and medical staff to do it. But should he? No. I would rather see him shut down for the rest of the season today than have him play this weekend. Because, I mean, like you said, yes, this is another season where he's not finishing the season, right? This is a concern. And if you can't save Stafford from himself, you're going to have to just take him out of the game and hope that next year, start playing for next year, start winning next year today by not throwing away three games. If he's healthy, if he's 100% healthy, what do you do in these next three games? Are the Lions really winning out to go 8-8 and have a small chance at winning the playoffs or making the playoffs? It's about a 1% odds they're being given right now if they make the playoffs. Are you beating Tennessee? Probably not. Are you beating Tampa Bay? Probably not. Are you beating Minnesota? Well, lost 34-20 earlier with Stafford, so you tell me. Maybe, even if he was 100% healthy, so a hobbled Stafford isn't going to get you much more, so what are you sacrificing him for? Now, sit him down, go wild. Throw some Wildcats, at wide receiver. I don't care. Do something spicy. Add new owners.
Okay. I see what you're saying. I mean, look, at the end of the day, yeah, this is a long shot to finish 8-8. I don't really foresee it. You got to go up against, in my opinion, the best running back in the league right now this week. You're not very good at seven. And the other problem, too, is it would be one thing if you could ensure that you can keep Stafford standing upright, but you can't even promise
right.
that. So you're really just risking that he doesn't get any more hurt than he already is, or you have to double pad him up, and then you don't know how effective he can really be in general. I mean, I've worn those rib protectors before. They're not that easy to throw in unless you like a really, really, really have a big arm, because you don't have a lot of rotation. You really got to be able to do everything from the shoulder. Luckily, Stafford has that ability. But so, I mean, we'll see, obviously. Like I said, Tennessee's a 74% favorite. 10.5 is the spread. Over under 51.5. Russ, let's get this painful, painful prediction over with.
So the key number here is 3.
Okay.
3 more games that Jelani Tavai is going to be a Detroit Lion, and that's it. That's my prediction. No, it's going to be bad. The 10.5-point favorites for a reason. I'm predicting 31-13 Titans. The actual 3 to pay attention to is Stafford, Galladay, and Ragnow. They're all likely out for the game. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get enough offense going to keep up with the Titans with this Lions defense without those 3. Yep. It's just not going to happen.
Okay. Jay?
So we might have to have our final side bet of the year. I've got Lions losing 14-34, so I'm pretty damn close to you there, Russ.
Really?
The big thing I'm watching in this game, as you're watching Tavai, my lucky number is also 3, because I think Derrick Henry is going to have his 3rd game with over 200 rushing yards. It would be his 9th game with over 100 rushing yards, and the Lions are giving up 4.5 per carry. I don't think anyone in Detroit, we might be ready for Christmas, we ain't ready to get ran on like we're about to between Dalvin Cook and Henry. So it's going to be ugly on the ground, and we're losing this weekend.
Okay. I'm very close with you guys. I'm thinking it's going to be a little bit further than that 10. Not by much, but I do see it a little bit further than that 10. 13 is the right number for the Lions, I will admit. I think that Tennessee sticks to that run game. They just kind of want to get these games over with. Get on to the next phase. I say 27-13 for them, but I also see 140-plus yards on the ground for Derrick Henry. I mean, and see, the problem is, too, after a while, we'll figure out how to stop him, but those big chunk plays he'll get are what's going to kill us. We'll stop him from 2 downs, and then he'll get 15 yards on a run, and the math's just going to start adding up. So I say 27-13 loss for the Detroit Lions to the Tennessee Titans. Switching over to college football, Justin, I'm sorry, I jinxed you guys. I said you guys were doing good, and then it turned around. Michigan State falls 39-24 to the Penn State Nittany Lions. I will say one thing, Jay, and I'm going to let you have the floor after it. I personally think, regardless of anything else, I think you guys have your quarterback in Peyton Thorne. I like this guy. I think some more talent in that backfield, some more talent in that receiving core. You guys will have a very, very tough-to-handle offense coming out of Michigan State.
I can see how you thought that. Start with that.
I can see how you got there.
Yeah, all right, so about the game real quick. We played half of a game. We didn't play a full game. It was absolutely disgusting. We can't run the ball. Peyton Thorne is good, but as we started the show, there was breaking news out of a commit, more so a portal transfer player, an Anthony Russo from Temple. He's in top 4 in the team history in passing yards, completions, attempts, and touchdowns, and will most likely be the starting quarterback for Michigan State next year. So Peyton Thorne, a little higher value of a placeholder. This Russo guy that I'm reading about, he's going to come in, and he gets to not use – he's using the COVID-19 waiver, so he doesn't burn a year. So he's going to be eligible coming over from Temple and being our starting quarterback.
Big Ten just creating crap left and right here. They really are.
I'm absolutely thrilled that one of the directors from the Avengers movies is coming to the United States.
The name looks familiar.
Fantastic.
Wait, Anthony Russo, I know that name.
So we'll see. I think to summarize this year, because the Maryland game doesn't count for Michigan State. Like that, I don't care what's happening with that. We're going to use this as film for next year. That's all Mel Tucker gets to do, basically. Hey, you suck. You're a jackass. You're an asshat. You did this wrong. You played half of a game. It's going to be fine. We're going to have a new quarterback. It's going to be a new year, and we're just going to chalk this up as a David Blough year, and we're going on to 2021.
Well, it sounds like Jay's ready to do this, so let's do this real quick. Maryland is a 56.6% favorite. I find that really crazy, seeing as Maryland is 2-3 on the year, and Michigan State is 2-5. By the way, Jay, I do believe we all finished the year predicting 3-5 for your Michigan State Spartans. So,
yes,
just putting that out there. Just putting that out there.
We know things here.
Spread is 2.5, over under 50.5. I got to tell you right now, with how bad those defenses are, I think that spread is wildly low. I really, really do. I am going to say, and Jay, I'm not going to mention he who shall not be named because I know how much you want to talk about that particular family of quarterbacks. So I will say I expect Maryland to have some success against you, but not enough to get the victory. I am giving it to your Michigan State Spartans. I am going to predict a score of 27-24. Okay, I'm being conservative. I think that score is going to be a lot higher, but I'm being very conservative here, and I'm going to say 27-24, not a lot of defense. This is a really good chance, like you said, for if there's a transfer coming, this is your last chance, Thorn, to really show you guys should be looking at me next year.
I appreciate that, buddy. Thank you. I also have Michigan State winning this weekend, 29-24. If I could, from my phone, because I'm not driving down to Detroit, I would hammer this over a 50.5. There's going to be scoring in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, obviously more than 1 point. There's going to be over 50 points. Like, this is going to happen. It's a throwaway game, but I'm taking State 29-24.
Okay.
Oh. I also loved the pun you threw in there earlier about this all just being film before the director comes in, so thank you for that. Also, Anthony Russo, nickname, the director. Let's make this happen. I got to pick against Maryland. It's in my blood. I can't help it.
Russ, you got some problems with Maryland, man. We might need to sit you down and work through what your problem is with Maryland.
Old Bay is good, but it does not belong on everything. 24-21 Spartans.
You're taking under.
Yeah,
okay, all right.
I am. I think, hey, the clock's getting later in the year. Maybe it's a little colder than they want. I don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Man, it's literally a week ago, some of these players might not have even been getting prepared to play this game.
That's true.
So I think it comes off a little off the rails there, not 100% prepared, a little fewer points there.
I don't know how you can say that, man. I mean, the most famous line ever, Maryland, crab cakes and football. That's what we do. I don't know how you can root against them, man. They're good at one of those things.
They didn't say good football. They just said that's what they do.
That's what they do. They don't, but they're good at one of them. Crab cakes, man. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of love them. All right, so those are our predictions. Obviously, like we said, Michigan not playing this week. Would have played Iowa. Would have been unfortunate to watch. I got to tell you, this is very, I see you raising the hand. It was an L. We have no success against Iowa, I feel like. But the most successful thing we've done against Iowa was getting their quarterback, Jake Rudock, a couple years ago. That was our best success against them. I got to tell you guys, Russ and I were talking about it before the show. This whole season just feels like a loss. Like, there's not one thing at the end of this that I can kind of like go, well, we played, like, kind of like with you, Jay. Like, you guys had a bad year, but you can at least say, well, if Russo doesn't come and that doesn't work out, you at least see potential in Thorne. You know you got something potentially there. I can't pick Russ a spot where I can go, well, we saw all this, and it was bad, but there's where I see potential. From the top, from Captain Khaki, all the way down to the freshmen and the redshirts, I don't see one. I like Cade McNamara. I don't think he's the guy. I think he is 100% a more talented Wilton Spate, the guy who's going to be okay and he's going to play well, but he's a placeholder till the next name comes.
Yeah, it was a disheartening year. I can't even say, well, at least they followed COVID protocols well.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't even do that, and which is troubling. The only nice thing that I can say, I'm going to try and stay optimistic, is if you have a problem that goes to the root, it has to be acknowledged before it can be fixed. And, oh boy, Jim Harbaugh's seat has never seemed hotter. No. I imagine we're going to get a lot of changes on the defensive staff this offseason. And he's, I mean, he's rumored to be going down and more and more of him moving to incentives. So, hey, maybe he'll do what he did in Stanford and actually get a bunch of competent assistants who, oh, a whole bunch of them have NFL jobs now because they were, oh, I don't know, good coaches. Try that again, right? And maybe this is a sign that that has to happen, and he's getting pushed by the university to do that.
Yeah. I don't believe it. I'm doing this for the homers out there. I don't feel this way, and I never will, but I will say it right now. The greatest thing that happened this year, we didn't lose to Ohio State. Ooh,
Well,
guess what? You didn't even take the field against Ohio State. And I hate that. Yeah. I hate saying you didn't, because I didn't go to this college. I spent enough time there that I think one day they need to give me like an honorary liberal arts degree. But I didn't go to this college. But Russ can tell you, I spent a lot of time on the campus of that college. And since I was a kid, I've always bled maize and blue. I love U of M. I really do. But talking on other shows, talking to other people, I'm having a real hard time backing the Michigan man anymore, because it's kind of a relic. It's not, it means more to you symbolically than what it really is. A Michigan man used to mean success. I hate to break it to you, our current Michigan man hasn't seen a lot of success in Ann Arbor, Jay.
No, he hasn't. And when you were talking about, like, pretending that there's potential, all I thought about was that Pinocchio commercial. Like, I look around this room and I see a lot of potential. Like, that's all I'm thinking about Harbaugh doing. It's just
that has to be the teaser for the episode.
Oh god, that's great. I see a lot of potential. Oh boy!
Hey, that's Mickey. Don't get your Mickey and your Pinocchio mixed up, right, friend?
Lately, I've just been doing the gingerbread man from Shrek. That's what that sounds like to me.
All right, that plays. No, there's issues in Ann Arbor. I don't even know how to chalk up not playing Ohio State and then, you know, probably ducking this championship series and all the COVID stuff. They're supposed to be the best COVID people in the Big Ten. Now it's a hot mess, man. And be good at one thing, like Russ was saying, but football-wise, I mean, I saw ESPN blow up my phone multiple times about people decommitting, which I understand it happens all the time. But you're losing 4 stars and 5 stars, and we only got, like, 3 stars. And I wish we all had better products, but Jim Harbaugh better turn his stuff around, because that contract extension is staring him right in the face, and so is probably every single Michigan fan right now.
No, I completely agree with you. I really do.
Around this room, and I see nothing but untapped potential. You have potential. You have... Oh, boy.
Geico, 15 minutes. Good.
That was the sound of Dylan McCaffrey getting poked in the eye.
I look around this room, and I see a lot of potential. You have potential. Oh God!
Sorry.
All right. No. You, that was perfect, though. I love that. That was great. No, I agree. Like, it's one of those things where this is one of the first seasons in a long time. This is gonna be hard. This is one of the first seasons in a long time where you hear what the what's coming out of the university, out of the athletic department, and you just go, you have no idea where we're going, and you're just doing everything you can to buy as much time before the masses revolt. It really is that. And Russ, I got to tell you, your statements of how everything's incentived on this contract does tell me this guy is not expecting to be wearing the maize and blue much longer as the head coach of Michigan.
Yep. Yeah. What do you do in a bad relationship when you're like, well, I'll just give him one more chance? Well, you either already ran out of chances or everybody knows it's on the outs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so moving on, we have the NBA and the NHL getting ready to make its return after the first of the year. Super exciting. Like, obviously, we've been looking forward to the Pistons, trying to cover them as much as we can. In a couple minutes, we are going to try to predict the starting fives as we see them for the Pistons. But before we do that, a little fun topic here we wanted to try. We are going to each pick a highlight and a low light from each roster. People were excited excited about, people we wish didn't put on the jersey. I took that and I kind of twisted it a little bit. Just a little
bit.
Because while there are people I'm excited that are on the team and there are people I could care less around the team, I looked at it from a perspective of a different way. So I guess we'll go to NHL first. And for me, the highlight as it is just that. It's the highlight players. It's the fact that we have Dylan. It's the fact that I know Jay's not a fan of him. We have Larkin. We have, Mantha. We have these young, talented players that we could potentially be seeing sooner rather than later. So I'm excited about that. I'm not going into this with any expectations of, oh, this is our year, we're going to win it. Nope, Stevie's got a little while to go laying the groundwork and building this up. The low light for me was actually two things. One, Jeff Blashill is still standing behind that bench. That, to me, is a low light because that, to me, tells me you either really see something in Blashill, in which case now I have to start questioning Stevie, or two, you're just thinking from the perspective of, let's get everything else fixed up, and then we'll worry about the coach. But the problem is, you can fix everything else and then bring in the right coach, but you don't know that that right coach is going to mesh well with anyone else. And at the end of the day, you're not going to trade away 17 like hockey players just for a head coach. It's just not going to happen. Scotty Bowman would have to come back for that to happen. So that's one of the low lights. And then for me, the other one, and this one's not as big a deal, but it is something I really hold on to. It's the fact that we're getting closer and closer to an NHL season, and not a single one of these guys has a C on his chest. Not a single one. And I am a little bothered by that, because guess what? Your general manager is literally known as the captain. So the fact that there is no captain on this team is worrisome to me. That's where I fall on it.
What if Steve Yzerman gives out the C like as the ball is virtually dropping this year? Like that would be very on brand for him to just sneak that in when no one's paying attention.
I think he walks.
We're gonna get like the Mighty Ducks thing. We're gonna get the Mighty Ducks thing where he's just gonna pat. He's gonna smack it on like Dylan Larkin's chest right before the first puck's about to drop.
Oh, I'd even more do. He just walks down as they're about to drop the puck, walks onto the ice, grabs Dylan Larkin's jersey, and just full Justin Timberlake, rips a patch off, and there's the C.
Yeah. We're doing this honorary commemorative patch, and in reality, it's just to hide the C. So for me. Those are the highlights and lowlights. There is talent on this team. There's still a ways to go, but there is potential. You can see Yzerman has a plan. It's not fully revealed yet, but we are starting to see pieces as we go along. The downside is I think he's stalling the inevitable with the head coach. I would have almost rather him say, no, we're building this. Let's get the guy on board we want to build this with. Now, you guys might disagree with me. There might just not be that guy out there available right now and that he feels he wants standing behind the bench. And it's also that I would like there to be a leader, because eventually someone has to take control of that locker room. And I'm sure someone has, but you need to signify that this is the guy that if everyone's talking, this guy stands up and starts talking, everybody shut up. No one else talks. And that's what I've heard from the locker rooms back with Steve Yzerman. Stevie didn't say much. Neither did Nick. But if either of them stood up and started walking to the middle of the room, everybody was quiet because they knew you needed to listen to this guy. They kind of knew what they were talking about. So those are my two. I don't know who wants to go next, but those are my two.
I'll go. We'll start with the highlight. My highlight is the prospects in Sweden right now, because it is nice knowing that at least twice a week I can, before lunchtime, open up Twitter and see Sider absolutely running someone over. And that's exciting for the future, because the future is really the best thing we got going on here. Mm-hmm. Honorable mention to the completely overhauled blue line. And Troy Stetcher being added, because, oh man, that was awful to watch last year, and it's just that it's different bodies alone is nice. Low light is that Bertuzzi went to arbitration and only came away with a one-year arbitration deal.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to do this all again next year. No, I don't think he's one of those irreplaceable core pieces, but he's one of the best players on this team, and he plays a significant role, and you can, right?
I do.
You probably agree with the statement even more then that you got to lock him up.
Yes.
It only gets more expensive the longer you put this off.
Yeah.
If he's playing top line minutes, he's going to by default, he's going to put up at least better production than he would otherwise. And it's going to cost you more. So, no, it makes more sense to lock it up sooner, and it just it hurts. Yeah. I would have liked to see at least a 3-year deal.
I see him as that guy that, while Dylan and Mantha and all these guys and Zadina eventually are out there doing the flashy highlight stuff that everybody wants to see, no one realizes it's Bertuzzi out there setting them up, doing the dirty plays to get that puck, to make those defensive efforts. Is he flashy? No, not even a little bit. He's fun to watch, in my opinion, because I'm terrible at hockey. So watching a guy that doesn't necessarily have like Wayne Gretzky's skill set, a little more enjoyable. That's my kind of guy. But I like him for that. I like him because I think the things he does don't show up on the stat sheet, but they need to show up on the paycheck because he is doing a lot for this team. And when this team starts getting good, a lot of it, a decent amount of it, is going to have a direct reflection with Bertuzzi, in my opinion.
I mean, he's a good complimentary piece. Yeah. And on a Stanley Cup winner, you have a player like him. You absolutely do.
We name any of those
teams.
It's
easier to find him than Larkin.
Yeah, you name any of those teams, and you're going to... they may not perfectly match up. Like, you can say, like, Larkin matches with Sergei, matches with Steve. You know, like you can find the matches. There might not be a perfect match between those 90 Cup teams and the 2008 team, but you're going to know, if you start talking about the traits, you're going to start seeing someone on that team that was vital, that a lot of those traits overlap. There's no perfect clone, but you can get pretty close.
I think Yzerman has some type of like, fetish isn't the right word, but like when he went to Tampa, he picked on Jonathan Drouin and like he pushed Drouin because Drouin was not like the flashy guy. He was kind of a get in the corners guy and end up shipping his ass out. Maybe he's just trying to Jonathan Drouin Bertuzzi and push him a little bit and see what he can get out of him this year and then give him that nice pay bump. Mm-hmm. So
you never know.
The fetish isn't the right word, but maybe it's what he's doing.
Yeah, you never know.
All right, so jumping over to my end of the wings, we have no overlap, which is excellent. That's always a plus. My highlight is going to be a guy who is on the rebound, and he took care of some personal things, and now he's over with the Red Wings, and that is Bobby Ryan. He was a high draft pick. It didn't pan out the way he was supposed to be, has been on two or three different teams already. He got his life back together. His first game back, he scores like 2 goals for Ottawa or something like that. I'm looking forward to seeing him. If he can crack top six and be an efficient winger on this team, that's a steal. So I'm hoping for Bobby Ryan. Also, obviously, my goalie pick of Greiss, he was my Varlamov from 2019. I wanted cheap, middle-aged, ready-to-be solids. I don't have to yell at you every single time I watch you play hockey. That's Greiss. Middle-age as in relative to hockey years. So Greiss coming in is huge. He's cheap, and he's reliable, and I love him. My low light. I'm going to say two other names. We're going to play a word association game, and you're going to fill in the blank for me, okay? All right, so here's my two
Dan
names.
Dan Clary.
I could have done that. We can make it four. Thomas Yurko, Thomas Tatar, fill in the last name. Because they're all the same player, in my opinion, just with different names.
Thomas Yurko, Thomas Tatar.
Vlad Nemestikov?
No, he was going to be someone I'm looking forward to, but not Nemestikov. He has 1 year left, and he's out of this godforsaken city, thank God.
It's not Mantha. Who do you have a problem with?
Luke
Glendening.
You guys are on the breakaway, and you just fell down.
Helm?
And didn't...
Oh, Helm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Helm.
No, good God. Yurko, maybe. I see skill set in Tatar. I don't see that in Helm. I just see straight speed.
Yeah.
Tatar at least could move.
Got some skill. He's a possession monster.
Tatar and Yurko and Helm, for some reason, are the same sandwich from the same shitty counter, and I'm out on Darren Helm. He is like the now Abdicator's gone. Helm is my last piece from like that point in time that I just need to push off the cliff and move forward from. So one more year of Darren Helm, we're done with his ass.
Yeah, Yurko's best hockey was done in the locker room with those stick tricks he was always filming.
See, thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. That had to be said.
Fair enough. I agree. It's fine.
That had to be. Yes, we have to bury Thomas Yurko, who's been bouncing around to so many different teams. Yeah. People forget he's in the NHL. Yeah, get that guy.
I will say this right now. If Bobby Ryan can't crack the top six, I want to know who the hell's in this top six. Not to say that we don't have talent,
But I'd be very curious as to why you sign a guy like that who is actually a good hockey player and don't find a way to get him on the ice as often as possible. That's just me thinking out loud.
Especially when you have no second line.
Exactly.
If Filppula is like, hey buddy, third line, no, we have problems.
You kill Filppula immediately. You just take it. You take him. There can be only one, my friend.
I think Filppula at the center. I think I just botched that, but that's okay.
You may have messed that up.
Yep.
Filppula is still here. That's all that matters. all right, Jay, moving over to the Pistons.
Pistons, in my very illustrious career of being an NBA fan, my highlight, it's a little apparent. It's something I'm gravitating towards. It's going to be Mason Plumlee. I know we have a lot of rookies coming in. We got a lot of guys coming in on their second go around on a new team, if you will. Mason Plumlee is my guy. He's reliable. He's under the radar. I hope there's some grit in his game with the Pistons. I would just like to see someone be the Bertuzzi for the Pistons in a way. So I'm going with Mason Plumlee. My low light is going to be Blake Griffin. Reason being is he shouldn't be here. I think if we actually moved him like we were supposed to over two seasons now, maybe we're getting closer to a faster rebuild. I understand if the parts and the partners aren't there to trade with. I'm expecting Griffin to get dealt at some point in time. Why not just get it over with so we can be really, really raw and young and see what we have? So, and I can't really shit on new people who are just coming to the team. Yeah. That was the hard part. So I'm going with Blake Griffin.
Okay. Rusty?
So my highlight is the draft picks, the young rookies coming in. We'll include Sekou with that. It's partially that 90% of this team is brand new. That's exciting, and that's a highlight because, wow, they needed to go in a drastically different direction, and for the most part, they did. But I'm excited to see how these units play out. I think if Justin keeps up with this fandom, he's going to eventually move from Plumlee to Isaiah Stewart as his big man crush. That's a guy with a ton of grit in his game. And he's got shoulders bigger than my head. The dude's an absolute monster. And if he can get on the court as a rookie, he'll endear himself to fans, even though I think Sadiq Bey, if we're talking about late first-round picks, is a little higher potential there.
Yeah.
My low light is all the stretching and waving. What are you doing? First off, you kept Magruder but waived Zaire Smith, who's a 21-year-old with potential he missed an entire year because of a severe allergic reaction. That's a viable excuse why he didn't produce. Now that he's healthy, give him a chance. Now we got to get rid of him to keep Magruder for some reason and trade for Dedmon to stretch his money. You're a rebuilding team. You're supposed to take on money, not extend it on into future years where you will need the money just to be able to pay $20 million to Jeremy Grant. That was troubling. We'll see how that ends up, though.
Yeah, I completely understand. Mine's a little interesting. My positive is Blake Griffin. It's the fact that Blake Griffin is on this team, in a team where we really did just change it all out. Derrick Rose and Blake Griffin are the two here. If Blake Griffin can stay healthy and can play, I think it'll be phenomenal for this team. I think with all these new guys, they're all going to want to try to find their little thing here, and it's going to be more fun team ball. It's a lot of different pieces working together, but it should be enjoyable to watch. So Blake Griffin, this is a chance. You want to stay healthy, you want to prove you can be, you know, an effective player in this league. This is the time to do it because right now the team is officially yours. You have seniority now on this team. No one's been there longer than you. This is you. My low light, my down thing. Blake Griffin is still on this freaking team. Like, that's the problem. Like, I am so torn right now because I agree with Justin. He doesn't need to be here anymore. It's time to make the move. It's time to trade him away. Now, that's where I'm torn because part of me wants to see what Blake Griffin can do when it's officially his team. No one else on this team can really shout him out. This is him. He's the Pistons, you know, leader. Which I don't think he was in the past few years. I think him and Reggie had a lot of inability to work together, and I think Reggie kind of wanted to be the man, and I don't think that worked out well for him. And then he also had to fight with Drummond because Drummond was the big name here until Blake got here. But at the same time, Blake's aging. He's not the guy he used to be. This isn't Lob City where you can just throw it up and he'll dunk on anyone. He's really, if you watch the games, you'll see he's transitioning to now wanting to be a perimeter player. He shoots a lot more jump shots, which 5 years ago, Blake Griffin would never do. Blake Griffin was always get to the basket. I get you're getting older. You can't necessarily do it consistently, but you can't just start settling for three pointers. I don't want to hurt your feelings, Blake. Rasheed Wallace started doing that towards the end of his time here. We got rid of him because he kept doing that. You weren't filling the role we wanted you to fill. So I'm really split here. Either way you look at it, it's Blake Griffin. The side plus for me, though, is I'm really excited. And I know Russ has mentioned this guy a lot. I'm really excited to watch Sekou play basketball. This guy is just fun to watch, in my opinion. So that's my positive and negative for this one. We're going to move on now. Going to do our best here. This is going to be very interesting because you're really just drawn out of a hat. There's a million different ways you can go about this. We're going to try to pick our starting five, but I'm going to challenge you here. I want your starting five, but I want to know who's going to end up becoming that sixth man or first off the bench guy for the team this year. Okay? Rusty, I'll let you go first.
Okay. I think I can hit your curveball here. I think okay. I'm prepared for it. We'll start off with last preseason game. The starting five was Hayes, Wright, Grant, Griffin, and Plumlee. So close.
Yeah.
I'm making one tweak there. I want to keep Hayes. I'd rather limit Rose's minutes and let him kind of work with the second unit and work with some of the later draft picks and give Hayes a starting job there. I'd rather have Rose for more games than more minutes per game. I'd start seeing Mihaliuk at the two. Just because I'm prioritizing adding a actual threat from 3-point, he led the team in 3-point shooting last year, and he's only improved. So set him there, so we just have another shooter. There's enough focal points in air quotes on this offense already that we don't need a second ball handler in Dellen right there. Grant at the three, hey, you pay $20 million, you're starting stuff, but Blake Griffin at the four, worst case. Leadership, and he's a minute sponge. Best case, it's a showcase for a trade. And then five, again, because money talks, Plumlee, who I would, frankly, staple to Killian Hayes. But if Hayes is out there, Plumlee's out there, you two are a pick-and-roll battery, and you're just going to run it to death until Killian is at an NBA above-competent level at it in his rookie year. Because I think the main reason Plumlee is on this roster is to develop Killian. So don't tiptoe around it. Dive straight into it. My sixth man then is Rose. He's going to come in. He's going to be a spark. He's going to be the secondary scorer for that other unit. I doubt we'll staple him right to Sekou. They showed some flashes together in the last preseason game just to be able to feed off of each other. Take some attention away from Sekou, who's a little more raw than Killian, so I don't know that he's ready for those heavy minutes yet. But Rose has still got enough in the tank to be some kind of an asset for this team as a sixth man.
Okay. I like it. Jay, over to you.
So, full disclosure, I just want to get this straight before I go. Is the two position the same thing as the wing?
The two is the shooting guard.
Which is sometimes called a wing.
Yeah.
Oh, God damn it. I'm never going to learn.
you have the two guards. You have the point guard, who is traditionally the one that brings the ball up the court and sets the play.
Read that on Wikipedia.
Guys like Chris Paul, people like Steve Nash, all them. The number one shooting guard, who are like Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan, the guys who they're your scorers. 9 times out of 10, you're giving them the ball to score. That's what they're more known to do. You have the small forward, which is what LeBron James, Giannis is. That's usually your bigger, but it's your bigger guy, but he's your more skilled guy. He's someone that can take the ball on, traditionally. I'm not talking about today's basketball where everybody dribbles, but traditionally it's the guy who he's your more skilled, larger player, like 6'8", 6'9". Blake Griffin would be considered a small forward / power forward, but you know, those kind of guys who are effective scorers as well. You have the power forward who are guys like, I mean, nowadays it's everybody, but guys like Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, they are still very skilled players, but they're more, you want them as like your down low defensive player. Then you have guys like centers, Andre Drummond, Anthony Davis, Dwight Howard, those kind of guys who are your Ben Wallace, who are your rebounders, your defensive centers. That's why they are the center of the defense kind of thing. So
yeah. All I've got down is center and point guard. You're a small forward, but you're the biggest guy in the court.
Well, see, that's the problem. Back in the day, it did trend that high. Like, center was the biggest guy, point guard was the shortest guy. And it was, you know, kind of like when you get bars on a phone. It was like that.
Gotcha.
Nowadays, it just bounces like crazy. Nowadays, you have centers that are shorter than your small forwards, and it's a lot more. It's called Euro ball. It's a lot of, like, skilled, like LeBron, or not LeBron, Dirk Nowitzki created it. Because Dirk Nowitzki's 7 feet tall. Dirk Nowitzki should have been a center in the NBA. Dirk Nowitzki has one of the greatest jump shots of all time. So it's like, no, we got to kind of get him out in space. So.
Gotcha.
Euroball really screwed it up. Back in the day, it was very easy to explain basketball.
Advanced it.
Yeah.
Well, advanced it.
It advanced it, but it took like a skill set that kept guys in the NBA and said, oh, wait, you can rebound like crazy and you can do putback dunks. You can't dribble or shoot from outside the 3-point line. No, we can't use you. We need centers don't need to be on 3-point lines unless, like you said, they're setting picks. That's the only reason a center should ever go near the 3-point line.
I for one am completely for the idea of adding more skill and taking the Kwame Browns of the league and just saying, go to China, you go play over there.
Yeah, but see, those guys stood a they fit a purpose when back in the day you were actually allowed to touch the person. Nowadays, if you put your hand on someone, it's an immediate flagrant foul, you're ejected. Like back in those days, it was the reason you didn't go in the paint, because there was some 7 foot, 300-pound guy that was going to put you on your butt. Because he
could. Bill Laimbeer was going to kill your nephew through your chest.
By your standards, Shaquille O'Neal doesn't exist in the NBA. Then
I think you have room for one guy who can't stretch the floor at a time, right? So you could have Shaq in the center, but then your power forward's got to be able to shoot the three.
That's fair. I mean, it is. But that's what the Pistons ended up doing. Rasheed could shoot from the outside because they knew if Ben Wallace left that little paint area that he couldn't do anything for them. So, except set picks.
I appreciate the lesson. I'll have to have a quiz later, and I might have to fail on my starting five, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to start people where they don't belong.
Let's make it work.
This is the Detroit Pistons, man. They might start where they don't belong.
All right, so I'm going Rose.
Okay.
I'm going Griffin.
As your backcourt?
I don't really know where. I just want him to start. And then I'm going...
It's in a mixing bowl. It's just in a mixing bowl.
Okay.
And then it's like Euro ball point 2.0. Like okay. We're making the next
so
ball.
Slating them to where they would go. Right now you said Rose, Griffin, and Okafor. So right now you have you have your forwards, you have your power forward in your center, and you have your point guard. You still need a shooting guard and a small forward.
Some wings, all right, if you will.
Some wings, yeah.
I think I'm going to grab those, I hope. I'm going to go with Ellington because he's back for his second time around. Does he fit any of those names?
He would be a shooting guard or a point guard, yeah, because Rose can play shooting guard.
Just like I planned. And then we're going to start with Josh Jackson because he's on his second team since he got drafted, trying to get him to have his refresh, if you will. So Rose, Griffin, Okafor, Ellington, and Josh Jackson.
And who comes off the bench first?
Hooper. I think we should give him a chance this year, just to make sure we know what we've got on the mascot ground.
Okay. I like it. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. It could go a million different ways here. I'm going to go with something Russ said, but I'm going to replace someone in it. My starting lineup is actually Derrick Rose and Killian Hayes. And I want Okafor in there as center because to me, and I'm not trying to put anything against Mason Plumlee. I think they are basically the same kind of guy. But when I look at Okafor, I see Jahlil Okafor as a guy who has, almost like Ben Wallace, has zero interest in ever being the focal point of the offense. He knows his role is to set picks, to get rebounds, put backs if you can, and play defense on that end of the court. He is one of those guys. So that lets Killian Hayes really work on his scoring. Derrick Rose, who's a good scorer, but also can kind of show Killian Hayes the ropes of what it means to be a starter. I don't, as much as I like, and I'm not going to even try to say his last name, I'm just going to say Svi, who you put in there. I like them. There's not enough NBA experience between the two of them, which is next to none, to put them as the starting backcourt that early on. I mean, that to me just feels like you need to have a veteran out there, whether it is Wayne Ellington or Derrick Rose, to kind of level it off. That way they don't get too, they know how to calm down, slow it down when we're having trouble. So I like Derrick Rose, Killian Hayes, and then I want Jahlil Okafor as my starting center. Blake Griffin obviously is going to be the starting power forward for this team. And lastly, I said I wanted to see him play, so I might as well get him in as often as possible. Sekou Doumbouya is the starting small forward for the team. First off, the bench is, to me, it is either Wayne Ellington or Mason Plumlee. It just depends on what you're needing. If one of those guards is having an off night, get Wayne Ellington in there to spell him. One of the bigs, because I personally do believe that Plumlee can play both forward positions, power forward and center. So you can get him in for Jahlil Okafor or for Blake Griffin, or move Blake down to the small forward and let Sekou Doumbouya come sit down for a few minutes. It gives they have a lot of options here in how they can go about this. But I think Derrick Rose has to be the starting point guard right now because he's got the most experience. He's probably the best fit at point guard for what they have, and they can kind of build off. And Killian Hayes is going to find ways to score. They all seem to like him out there when I watch the games. And it just gives them that experience. And plus, Derrick Rose is more than comfortable pulling up from behind the three-point line. So that's how I feel about it.
That's exciting. I'm ready to do this.
If Jeremy Grant isn't in the starting lineup halfway through the season, there's going to be a riot.
Oh, yeah.
$20 million per year, biggest contract that Weaver's handed out, one of the first. Man, that'd be an awful look. That'd make me question Weaver.
See, that's the reason. I think Jeremy Grant will find his way into the starting lineup. I really do. But I think, listen, you drafted Hayes. You drafted this guard. He needs to be playing for a little while. We need to see what we can get out of him. And then over time, you're gonna have to shift and realize guys are there. The guy I actually was going to put as the sixth man, but he was mentioned before. I like Josh Jackson as the sixth man. I just think it's going to take him a little while to become that. I think early on, you're going to see guys who are a little more established in the league take on that role. Because like you said, it's a lot of different players and it's a lot of younger guys. I mean, this team's got a lot of draft picks, a lot of young guys. You want that veteran calming presence that's going to be like, hey, yeah, they just went on an 8-0 run. Calm down. Let's slow down. We don't need to rush anything. There's still plenty of time. And I don't necessarily think you're going to get that with rookies all out on the floor together. It's going to happen eventually, but you need to give them some time. Josh Jackson's not a rookie, but I feel Wayne Ellington or Mason Plumlee have a little more veteran experience there. So it's just a personal opinion. What do I know? All righty. Well, that's going to do it for us here in Armchair Sports Talk. Like I said, next week, going to have some fun with a little Christmas episode, I guess, if you can call it. Have a little tradition there of the All I Want for Christmas Is. We're going to try to figure out what we want out of Detroit for Christmas. Likely won't get it. I don't think any of us have gotten it over the last couple years. But look, you keep writing the letters to Santa because you hope eventually he'll answer one. And also, I have a little fun topic for these guys. They have not seen it, have not heard about it, don't know what it is. All I know is it has the potential to raise Justin's salt level astronomically. It's
let's do it.
It's going to be fun. I think we're going to have a good time with it. All that next week. We appreciate everybody listening. My thanks to Sergeant Salty, Justin Marcus.
Hey, it's been some positive episodes. I'm looking forward to being pissed next week. I appreciate this.
2 days before Christmas, I'm going to piss you off. Okay, Ebenezer. Let's do it. And as always, the stat man, Russ Ivanek, I know he calculated everything I just said and realized it doesn't add up.
Yeah, that was the weirdest and maybe most exciting tease we've ever done. I'm looking forward to it a lot.
I hate to break it to you. Justin doing a Pinocchio voice is the weirdest thing we've ever done.
Say the weirdest thing.
Ah,
gotcha. That's not even in the top 10 for me. But tease for next episode. Yeah. Something to look forward to.
And as always, I am your host, Eric Dorsch. That is one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.